Culinary Institute of Child Nutrition proudly welcomes you to The Mix-Up, an iBites production. I'm your host, Chef Patrick Garmong, mixing it up with culinary experts from the child nutrition community.
Hello, everyone. I'm Garrett Burdan with the Culinary Institute of Child Nutrition, filling in for Chef Patrick Garmong. On today's episode of The Mix-Up, I'm joined by Aaron Primer, Director of Food and Nutrition Services at San Luis Coastal Unified School District in California. Welcome, Aaron. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to see you. Well, first of all, tell us a bit about yourself and what you love about where you live.
Well, I am a California girl through and through. I was born and raised in Southern California. I lived in the Bay Area, and now I've settled on the Central Coast, and I love everything about the Central Coast. It is a perfect place to live. The weather's great, and we have really abundant agriculture. And I didn't realize how much we have right here in our own backyard. And it's been really fun exploring and figuring all of these things out.
That is so cool. And I visited San Luis Obispo before. It's been many, many years. It is a beautiful setting, green hills, just really lovely. So I can't wait to hear a little bit more about that. So I'm really curious, what type of work did you do before transitioning into school nutrition? And tell me how that pathway worked out for you.
Well, I will say that from a very young age, food always had my calling. My very first job, as soon as I was able to work, was in the food industry. And I somehow found my way into institutional food fairly early on, where I went to college at Chapman University. I worked for the institutional food service provider. I was an intern. I got to learn about catering and marketing. And I thought, wow, this is actually a whole career around what I've always been really drawn to. So it seemed like a very natural fit. And through that experience, I was able to work in not only colleges and universities, but hospitals and schools, and really the institutional side of food. And throughout my career, what's really anchored me in this work is changing the face of institutional food. When I say the word hospital, I'm sure images of gross, mysterious, weird, you know, you don't know what you're getting. There's limited choice. Same thing with the history of school food, and to be a part of changing that and really wanting to make it more of a star of our industry, I think is really exciting.
Yeah. And I love how you are talking about institutional food service, because that is what those of us in the industry call it, because it's feeding a large quantity of people in one short period of time.
Yes.
But the term itself just sounds so unappealing when you think about what the food could possibly be. So I want to hear more as we talk about how you're changing the feel of institutional food. So let's first, before we get there, let's dive into your school district. You're with San Luis Unified School District, San Luis Coastal Unified
yes.
School District.
And Coastal's important because yeah. we service the cities of San Luis Obispo and then also Morro Bay and Los Osos on the coast. So it really is a representation of the entire district.
Perfect. I'm sorry, I missed that one, but I caught it. So how long have you been with the district? And just tell me a little bit about the district itself.
Sure. So I went from institutional big food service provider to self-op back in the Bay Area. And that was a real turning point in my career, realizing that as an individual operator working as a partner, as a school district employee, really had the most opportunity for change. So 5.5 years ago, I came down to San Luis Obispo County with my husband. I was pregnant at the time with my first child, and I have literally planted my roots here. And it means a lot to me. Now my oldest is 5 and in kindergarten at San Luis Coastal. And I really see the value of this work. I see the value in creating really fun food experiences for kids, and having this lens of marketing and catering in my background has really allowed me to approach school food in a very different way than what these traditional institutional views have always been.
Yeah. And I love how you're bringing that, you're drawing from your marketing and catering background, because, you know, what we know from catering services is that food has to be fun,
yeah.
right? I mean, if you want customers in catering, it's got to be fun. So tell me, I have so many questions for you today, but so tell me more about how you're making those food experiences fun for your students.
Well, you know, it's really about being open. I think that's where it starts. We have to be open to what is available to us, what's around us, where can we find these connection points, who are other advocates in our food system who want kids to have these kinds of experiences. And then really thinking about your operation. What makes sense? What can you handle? What can you process? What can you entertain? The possibilities are really endless. And I think having that open approach has allowed us to do things that I could have never imagined 5.5 years ago. Most recently, we were at an elementary school the Friday before Halloween, and we had a Freaky Fruit Friday. We wound up finding a local farmer who grows finger limes. And I had never heard of a finger lime. I thought, well, that's weird. And, you know, if I find weird food, I really want to share that with kids. So I found this farmer because he's a parent at this school site that we wound up tasting at. And he said, hey, I have these really odd things. You know, are you interested in trying them and checking them out with kids? My son really likes them. And here's some information. And, you know, come out to the farm. And I think that kind of openness and connectivity is really what brings us together in the food system. The people I'm talking about are Justin and Megan Shanley of Shanley Farms in Morro Bay. And I actually had some ship to you because yes. I really wanted us to do this together, because so much of experiential learning with kids isn't me talking about it. It's yeah. not any of us sitting up here talking about it, telling them about how great nutrition is, right? That's kind of boring. So we really want to get our hands and our mouths involved. So we have today some finger limes. Now, this is a weird name. There's lots of different terms that you can use. You can use citraburst. That's another one that's on here. Finger lime doesn't do it justice, because what's inside of these things, so they look like a very long shaped lime. That's really what they're looking like here. They're very long shaped. Different sizes. But what's inside of these things are these little pearls, almost like a lime caviar. They pop with citrus in your mouth. And I would love for us to try one together. I think yes. we have one ready. We both have them sliced, cut in half. And the more you roll them through your fingers, the more these little lime caviar bites come out. And you taste it. And it's like a big pop of lime.
Yeah.
I've got mine here. Lime. Yep. And they're so tart and bright, and we get these puckered faces. And I've told kids, this tastes like nature's Sour Patch Candy.
Oh my gosh. You're totally right.
And they're totally in. So this is a way to get kids to be really excited about trying something that's different, about welcoming new flavors. Something like this can be put on a taco. We've even tried it in a vinaigrette dressing, so that as you're trying something like a dark leafy green and you have this pop of citrus from a citraburst finger lime, what a cool experience. What a way to talk about nutrition in a way that's not me telling you to take a half a cup of fruit or vegetable.
That is so cool. It's so cool. And I want to describe these a little bit more. So I have them in front of me. And thank you so much for having these shipped to me. This is a really cool experience. So these finger limes, you're right. They're like a really awesome Halloween like themed like treat.
Yeah.
They're small. They're elongated. And so the way I opened mine, I'm sure you can just cut it in half with a knife, but I just snapped mine open. And I just kind of bent it in half and it snaps open. Ooh, this one's pink inside. It's like a little bit pink. The first one I opened is white. Oh my gosh, that's really cool. But anyway, you're right. These little pearls of lime juice essentially come out, and they're like a little bit crunchy. They're tart, but not too tart. Oh, how cool. So you have these experiential things that with your students where it's fun. It's not, you're right. It's not about talking about the nutrition message. It's talking about try this new thing. You've probably never had it before. And as children get exposed to trying some different things that have a little bit of excitement and buzz around them, then maybe they'll have the courage to try something else later, right?
Exactly.
So I'm gonna have one more taste here.
They're so good. They're so delicious. The other piece to this, so I've learned a little bit more about finger limes. I didn't know about finger limes a couple of months ago, right? So they originated in Australia. So there's a connection there through geography. Mm-hmm. And they are not technically a lemon or a lime. They're neither.
Wow.
They're their own type of citrus. And so to learn about the history and the biology of this plant, of this edible, fun experience, I really think we can connect these through the classroom. I feel like that is such an opportunity for school food that when we're talking about Australia, world geography, mm-hmm. why not have a finger lime experience in the lunchroom to connect what kids have learned in the classroom? There's so much opportunity to use food as this storyteller, as this vessel of connection. And we as school food operators have such an opportunity to be able to make those intentional connections through the classroom, through the cafeteria. We're even growing passion fruit in our school garden at one of our middle schools, and Shanley Farms grows passion fruit as well. So to know that I can grow something really wild and exotic that I really can't produce in enough quantity to make something meaningful for the masses, but I can have that experience in that garden and then purchase supplemental from this local farm and create a passion fruit vinaigrette or add passion fruit in a smoothie and be able to extend this experience beyond. It is scalable, it is replicable, and most importantly, it's really memorable.
So memorable. I have like goosebumps thinking about all of the possibilities. Now, and I'm thinking as you're talking about this, You live in a unique area where these are available to you locally. And I'm thinking about people that don't, you know, I'm in the Pacific Northwest, so we don't grow finger limes or passion fruit. However, the districts in other areas of the country or in other areas of the country, they can potentially use, like if they're on the fruit and veggie grant program, they could probably use some of the funds there to have this tasting experience. Is that a true statement?
Yes, most definitely. Okay. So a farm like Shanley Farms ships. So that's a really easy way to be able to introduce something super funky and unique that may not be local, but is still supportive of our Buy American provision. It's supporting a family farm. And I think that's another lens of this too, is it's not just about finger limes in Morro Bay, California. It's so much bigger. It's about wherever you're at and what's in your area. And it may not be a finger lime. It's probably not going to be a finger lime, but it's going to be something else. And if you're open to having that connection, you will find those relationships. You will find the finger lime of the Pacific Northwest. You will find some really exciting thing that you may have never known even existed. I'll tell you, when I first came to the area, I found another product that really blew my mind, and it's a jujube from Rockfront Ranch out in the Cuyama Valley. And I had never really heard of jujubes. And this farmer has them fresh at a particular time of year. She also has a dried version. She makes a chip. And these are just things that it's fun to experience something totally unique with kids. We wound up learning, you see my connections here, we wound up learning that these jujubes are very similar to a Chinese date, and they're often used in celebrations around Chinese New Year. We wound up making a tea and a date energy bite for Chinese New Year and sharing some recipes out. And we would have never discovered those things had we not been open to what we could find in our area. You know, this particular farmer also has honey. I've recently called her and said, hey, let's talk honey. Yeah. You know, things that you may not have sought out, but because you're open to finding these local connections to wherever you're at, I really think they're possible. And the lean into that, Garrett, is really supporting our small family farms. There's so much that we can do as guardians of taxpayer money that can really go back into each of our respective local economies. I think that's a really important and powerful position for child nutrition directors to be in.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up too. And I think that's, it's so important to consider being the guardians of taxpayer funds when we're operating federally funded child nutrition programs. Well, so that brings me to this question. When you and I first met virtually back in July, you shared with me your philosophy on purchasing as close to your community as possible. talk about this philosophy and how it came to be and how you apply it to your procurement and your menu.
Yes. So I will say that this philosophy, you know, I've always had this deep connection to food, and I didn't really realize how powerful local food could really be until I started working in the Bay Area. I had a lot of connections with the Center for Eco-Literacy, Tomcat Ranch, institutions who were open, or, you know, entities who are supporting institutions in figuring out how to support this kind of work. But still at a relatively early time, I worked at Menlo College and Menlo School. We operated an all-organic dining facility. We would go to farms and make these connections. And so as I was very young in my career as a new manager, having these kinds of experiences shown to me, were really pivotal in building this foundation for, hey, it matters where we get things from. It matters what the ingredients are in the products that we buy. It matters where this money is going. And as I've been supported with reading things like the Rethinking School Lunch Guide from the Center for Eco-Literacy, when I started as a self-op operator, it really is, it's something that shaped my direction. It's something that I've really looked at as providing some food values that I can really stand behind.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's really important when we think about where our food comes from and showing the connection between what we procure and what eventually gets to our plates. I mentioned, you know, discovering this up in the Bay Area. As I've come to the Central Coast, I've been very open to making these discoveries. And because we have such an abundant agricultural area, I knew local fruits and vegetables would be easy to find. I have been blown away by finding not only local grains through local bakeries and local grain growers, but also local proteins. That ranges from both animal proteins and things like cheeses, lentils, beans, things that I did not think would, tortilla chips. I mean, these are not products that I thought were, you know, I'd be able to procure. And yet here we are with almost all five meal components sourced in our own county. The fifth one we're waiting on is milk. And I actually am in talks with Cal Poly to figure out, can we use the milk that that they milk from the Cal Poly cows and actually put Cal Poly milk on school food menus here in our own county? I think that's my school food dream. So if I can get that happen in all five components, I think that makes a real serious statement about going local.
Absolutely, it does. And how cool that you have Cal Poly right there to partner with on things like this. Just as a follow-up, so you're thinking about the fluid milk, and you mentioned cheese, and I'm wondering if the cheese is Cal Poly related, but you're also talking about fluid milk. So how are you expecting that that might work out in the future?
Well, I'm going to go back to saying that this really just comes to from being open, right? Back when the pandemic hit, we were planning on doing some in-person tastings with students, and then we weren't able to do that when we went virtual. We wound up doing a virtual kids cooking class, and that was a partnership with our library system. We were trying to taste these lentil burgers with kids, and we had some Zoom classes. And in one of these classes, one of the students in our class said to me in the chat, "Do you have any interest in local milk?" And I was like, "What? Huh? That doesn't fall from the sky. Who are you? What are you talking about?"
Yeah.
It turns out her father is the new person in charge at Cal Poly Creamery, and that's the kind of connection that makes it really possible for these kinds of conversations to happen. He comes from Vermont and had a lot of experience with farm to school success. And he said to me, "Yeah, give me a call. Here's my number. Let's talk about this." And from that moment, from that conversation, we have been able to source local cheese. We were doing a weekly pantry box when everyone was in virtual learning. We had both Cal Poly cheese and another local creamery, Central Coast Creamery cheese, on our menu. These are really amazing high-end local cheeses that were just part of a free box for everybody. On top of that, we were doing local eggs, local breads, local produce. And it really meant a lot. I think this piece, Garrett, I want to make sure I highlight, and that is that the history of school food, there has been stigmatization associated with that. Yeah. And a real big catalyst in changing that is by serving food that is so good that everybody wants to eat it. It no longer matters who pays that bill, whether it's the government, whether it's mom and dad. And with universal free meals, you know, with testing this out right now, right? We're still in seamless summer option and having free meals, universal free meals coming in California next school year. We are seeing in our district the opposite of stigma. We are seeing a program that is soaring. We have increased our participation by 52% in coming back to school this year. And it is because of these choices. It is because when you come in, one of my almost daily vegetarian meal options is a local cheese box featuring sliced cow poly cheese. I no longer get it in an 8 or 9 ounce wedge. I get it in a 10 pound round and we slice it in house so that I can make these cheese boxes. We are changing the face of school food because it shouldn't be a program that you have to participate with if you don't have enough money to afford it. And we are seeing this change right now by eliminating the need to pay for school lunch. And it is so incredibly wonderful. We not only see students who want this, but you know it's good when you've got adults saying, hey, how do I get in on this? And I have to say, I'm so sorry, it's a program for our students. You know, we can set up an account for you, but it's free meals for kids. And to be able to stand behind that with high quality food, I think is really gonna make a difference in how we operate child nutrition in the future.
Oh, 100%. And I would love to see that local cheese box option. Just even a picture. I'll, in fact, maybe a road trip down to visit you and I'll see it. That is so great and such an important philosophy. Hearing you talk about it is really, really inspiring to me, and I hope inspiring to others. I have another follow-up question on this kind of same topic. You talk about how much local sourcing that you've been able to find because you've been so open to making the connections. Now, we all know that currently, with the pandemic going on and the supply chain issues happening, procurement has been extremely tough. Are you challenged by procurement, and is your local sourcing helping out with those challenges?
That is an excellent question. And I will say, first and foremost, I am human, so I am not exempt from any supply chain issues. Although here's what's so funny. What I am challenged with are things like paper boats, mm-hmm. 9 ounce cups, a bowl that I can heat something in that could, you know, like more paper goods. That's my biggest challenge right now. Mm-hmm. I have experienced food related challenge, but solutions are very easy, especially when you have local connections. I will say that I have not had a single disruption with a bread or baked good from my local bakery. In fact, I've had to lean on them more because I'm not able to get other things. So I think it's a really important highlight here to say that local matters when there's supply chain issue, right? But let's not be foolish. It's not super easy. There are complications, but this is part of that openness and flexibility and really being able to think through what are these challenges and how do we make it work? I'm very solution oriented. So I'm constantly thinking about, you know, how do we turn this puzzle into a piece that we can use? And one of those examples is tortilla chips. So we've got a local tortilla chip company, Taco Works. Anybody knows SLO, you know Taco Works. They're amazing. The Montana de Oro is child nutrition compliant. So if anybody's looking for a taco or a chip, you know, go to Taco Works, talk to them about shipping. But here's the deal. And this is part of the real challenge. So the Montana de Oro chip comes in a 15 ounce bag. That was perfect when we did a weekly pantry box. I sent home a chip for the week. I had 15 grains. That's great. Well, that's not so great when I'm back in person and I need a 2 ounce grain and they don't come in an IW bag, right? So I started out by trying to buy the IW. At this time of increasing 52%, I need to also make choices that are smart and helpful for my staff. So this seemed like one, okay, we'll buy a chip. Chip's a chip, right? Except supply chain was like, haha, can't do that. We're out of stock, make another choice.
Right.
So then I'm challenged with labor, right? How do I take a 15 ounce bag and have my staff that's already making more meals? How do I have them portion all of these? So we get creative. We get thinking about how to do this. We have actually now partnered with our Prepare program. This is one of our special education programs. These are older students. They've aged out of the systems. So they're 18 to 25. And they do different work throughout the county. They work at grocery stores and help with various tasks in various locations. And this year we said, hey, why not add our central kitchen to one of your locations? Let's work together. You need places to work. We need odd jobs done. Like, let's make it happen. So one of the best jobs that I have them do is take these chips, this 15-ounce bag of chips, and repackage it into 2-ounce portion bags. It's a fantastic fit for a skill set that is exactly the kind of work that makes a lot of sense to them. We also do peeling. We peel carrots or sweet potatoes. They have come in and saved the day more times than I can count, because they are reliable, that we have a regular schedule, and it really helps them learn some job-related skills that they may be able to take out and do and perform in the world outside of just being with us. What a huge win all the way around to keep a local chip on our menu, even if it doesn't come in the pack size that we were originally looking for.
Yeah. Again, Erin, you are leveraging your connections just to benefit you, your staff, your program, the students and families in your community. It's just really, again, very inspiring. It sounds like such a huge win. And a local tortilla chip. I wonder who else is doing local tortilla chips. There may be others, but that is so cool. Okay, well, so you're talking about all of this food experience and the local products and everything. So now I'm curious about implementation on your menu. I think you recently hired a chef for your department, and I'm curious, how did you come to that decision to create this position? Because it was a new position, right?
Yes.
And then, so what were the qualifications you were looking for, and what's your vision?
Definitely. Well, we're growing, right? Mm-hmm. We're growing, and we need more help. And I think that really thinking about our food values is what started us on this process. What are the needs that we have? What are the skills that we're going to be looking for? What kinds of programming do we want to have? And my background with catering and marketing is great. I could put together an awesome menu, but I am not classically trained. I'm a hobbyist chef, a hobbyist baker, but you know, I need someone with a little more skill set in the kitchen. And when we think about chefs in schools, this is relatively new. I don't think many chefs think about schools in, or, you know, child nutrition careers as being that. What? That's such an odd, I don't think many people come to that, you know, on their own. And, you know, the way that schools recruit for work, you know, many of us post on sites like EdJoin. You take 10 people and ask what EdJoin is, and you might get 10 different answers. So, yeah. You know, it's an interesting, it's not quite a match yet on recruiting and attracting chefs to school. So when we initially set out, we were actually looking for a nutrition coordinator. That was what our initial job posting was. Mm-hmm. And we wound up finding someone who is an incredible RD. She came to us from Colorado. She brings so much experience and farm to school background. And we were really excited to find her. During that recruitment, we actually found a couple of other people that we were really interested as well. And I think that's a beauty of right now is that, you know, there's a lot of people, a lot of really high quality, very skilled people that the theme that I'm finding is they're not just looking for work. They're looking for meaningful work.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important. So through this recruitment, we met Chef Chris, and Chef Chris came to us from country clubs. Yeah. Who would have thought that a country club chef would come working in school food? And what I love is that his approach is that he recently had a daughter, and he said, you know, from having my daughter, I see nutrition differently. I see cooking for kids differently. I see that as being really powerful. And if I can be part of an organization that has this meaning behind it and we stand for something, I want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of this idea of changing institutional food and really showing what it can be versus what it hasn't been. And so I think having these kinds of like-minded people on our team and, you know, really spreading this word, we talked a little bit about Cal Poly earlier. I would be remiss if I didn't mention, not only are we connected on the food side, but we're connected educationally as well. We have a partnership through their dietetic internship program. I often speak and host tours for their undergraduate nutrition classes. I'm also working on some partnerships with local community colleges. So I think it's really important that no matter where you're at, look around you. It's not just your own K-12 district, but what other educational institutions are out there that can also be partners in our programs. Sharing this messaging of what child nutrition can be, I think really does inspire others. And my hope is that we're going to have future dietitians and future chefs and future students right now really see the possibility of what we can do to make child nutrition really front and center of something people want to be a part of, something they really do seek out and know about.
Absolutely. And that meaningful work element that you mentioned earlier is so critical at this time, because we all want to be doing something where we're feeling like we make a difference. And this is the place to be if you want to make a difference in people's lives. Child nutrition is a great place to work. You're absolutely right. And so having you on this podcast is one important way to share that information and share that message out to everyone. So I really appreciate you saying that. We're nearly done. I have just a couple of more questions for you. You've mentioned so many things related to the work that you do. I'm curious, what has been the work achievement that is most meaningful to you so far?
Well, so far in 2020, in February of 2020, if you can think back to just before the world was crazy, it was slightly normal in February 2020. And I was very honored to receive the Farm Advocate of the Year Award through CAF, the Community Alliance of Family Farmers. And that was particularly special because of this work that I've started here in San Luis and really wanting to advocate for small and mid-sized farms and really push what farm to school can mean. And so that was particularly exciting. And I should ask you when this is going to air, because there's one more exciting one and I think I'm okay to share it.
Share it and then we'll air accordingly.
Oh, good. Perfect. Well, our district is very honored. We will be receiving a Golden Bell Award at the CSBA, the School Board Association, California School Board Association meeting in early December for our farm to school work and really providing a replicable program to inspire other districts to do this work, because it's not just passionate child nutrition directors. It's really having the support of superintendents and business officials and school boards. And when these things align, this is the kind of work that can happen. So I'm really, really excited to be able to share this next award with more audiences.
Erin, that is so exciting and due recognition for sure. And you're absolutely right. It's not just the leadership in the nutrition services department that can make these changes. Sure, changes can be made. However, when you have every administrator in the district on board, so much, it can be so much bigger. And you're right. I'm so excited to hear more about this when the time comes. Erin, it has been so fun talking to you today. I am just really inspired by you and the work that you do, and you know your thoughts and philosophies on feeding kids, the experiential learning, all of that. These finger limes, which I'm going to continue to snack on.
Same.
So much fun. I appreciate everything that you do for your community and for child nutrition, the greater child nutrition community. And it's just been such a pleasure, Erin.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me and for just sharing this message out. I can't wait to see what the future of school food holds for all of us.
I agree. Erin Primer of San Luis Coastal Unified School District, it has been a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Mix Up Podcast from the Culinary Institute of Child Nutrition.
Join us next time as we continue to mix it up with culinary experts from the child nutrition community. I've been your host, Chef Patrick Garmong from the Culinary Institute of Child Nutrition. Hey, don't forget to wash your hands.
project has been funded at least in part with federal funds from the U.S. Department of Agriculture Food and Nutrition Service through an agreement with the Institute of Child Nutrition at the University of Mississippi. The contents of this publication do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, nor does mention of trade names, commercial products, or organizations imply endorsement by the U.S. government. The University of Mississippi is an EEOAA Title VI, Title IX, Section 504, ADA, ADEA employer. In accordance with federal law and U.S. Department of Agriculture policy, this institution is prohibited from discriminating on the basis of race, color, national origin, sex, age, or disability. To file a complaint of discrimination, write USDA Director, Office of Civil Rights, Room 326W, Whitney Building, 1400 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 202-509-4410, or call 202-720-5964. USDA is an equal opportunity provider and employer.